Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or a smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana, Cuba. Beginning with a press review on how left-leaning European leaders are inspired by the way Mamdani developed his campaign in New York City. Following government plans for more austerity programs and cuts in the pension program, wealth taxes were proposed on the assets of French citizens owning over 100 million euros. Not an income tax, but a tax on possessions. 86% of the French population supported the idea. The parliament came up with a light version and then failed to pass any wealth tax at all. This week is the start of the 30th annual UN Climate Change Conference, or COP30, which is being held in Brazil. At a preview meeting, Brazilian President Lula da Silva expressed his goals in the meeting. France 24.
Now to the U.S. New York mayoral city race, mentioned it in the news, of course, inspiring political leaders across Europe this time, though.
That's right. Politico here reports that Europe's left is flocking to New York to take notes on Mamdani's meteoric rise. And several officials said that they've been in touch with members of Mamdani's campaign team in the hope of learning more about how to achieve their success. French left-wing Eurodeputy Manon Aubry, for example, was in New York City last week, and the article says that his success has sparked a newfound sense of optimism among left-wing politicians across Europe. And what they are wondering in particular is whether his focus on affordability issues will work also on European cities and regions, Stuart.
Busy day at the French Parliament, and potentially the fate of the government may once again hang in the balance. One major bill lawmakers are considering is the so-called Zucman tax. It's being brought by the ecologists and legislation named after the economist Gabriel Zucman. Supporters of the Zucman tax say it would solve the country's debt crisis. Critics say it would contribute to tax flight and curb investment. Our reporter, Antonia Kerrigan, is standing by at the French Parliament, and we can speak to her now. There is some popular pressure to raise taxes on the ultra-wealthy, but it's much more divisive in the Parliament, isn't it?
That's quite right. As you say, 86% of the French people have shown that they are favourable to higher tax on the wealthiest. That debate was really sparked this summer when an austerity budget was put on the table by former Prime Minister François Bayrou, and voters, private individuals started really questioning where all those savings were going to come from. So the Socialist Party's response to that was to table this idea of the Zucman tax. That's a 2% blanket tax on individuals, holdings and entities worth over 100 million euros. And the socialists believe that such a tax could bring in 15 to 25 billion euros a year to public coffers. Now, the government, when Sébastien Lecornu was reappointed prime minister, recognised that they were going to have to respond to this debate in some way. And so they tabled a less radical proposal addressing so-called holdings. These are entities in which wealthy individuals sometimes put private wealth and as in doing so protect it against wealth because it's in an entity rather than their private income. But by the government's own admission just an hour ago, this tax that they've tabled with its lengthy list of exemptions would only affect 0.1% of the country's economic actors, and by the estimates of the Economy Ministry would bring in less than €1 billion a year. The Socialist Party recognised that the Zuckman tax didn't look like it had a majority, and they've tabled a so-called Zuckman light proposal. This is a 3% blanket tax on holdings and entities and individuals worth more than €10 million, but with exemptions for family businesses and startups. That will bring in less than the initial Zuckman proposal. That would bring in more like €5 to €7 billion a year. It's as yet very unclear what the end result of all this will be.
Well, more political chaos is sure to come this week after France's lower house of parliament rejected a wealth tax as expected. Now proposed by the left, the so-called Zuckman tax would have imposed a minimum 2% levy on wealth of over 100 million euros and also respond to widespread public support for getting the country's wealthiest to shoulder what many see as their fair burden of rising debt. Lawmakers, though, apparently see things otherwise, meaning that the specter of new legislative elections again looms. Charlotte Lamb with more.
Contre. Il est rejeté.
An overwhelming no from French MPs, rejecting two left-wing wealth tax proposals. They voted down the so-called Zuckman tax, inspired by economist Gabriel Zuckman. It's a 2% levy on fortunes over 100 million euros, pushed by a coalition of left-wing parties. MPs also knocked back swing party the Socialists' softer proposal and bid to find middle ground, a 3% on assets above 10 million with more exemptions.
You can see that there is a profound disagreement about the reality of the basis for these amendments and taxes. No, there is profound disagreement. Take things seriously.
The Socialists expect a defeat, but have warned they could bring down Sébastien Lecornu's government if the ultra-rich aren't made to pay more.
What is at stake is bigger than us. And you have accepted, as we do, the promise of compromise, the promise of seeking the common good and the general interest. I fear that your stubbornness is leading you down the wrong path. I tell you, Mr. Prime Minister, there has not been the slightest compromise since we have been in this chamber.
To calm tempers, Lecornu says he's open to lifting the freeze on pensions and welfare benefits in his 2026 budget. The government's draft also includes a 2% tax on assets held in private holding companies, not tied to business activity. Still, Friday was a win for conservatives.
Zuckman, c'était juste de la taxe mania.
Zuckman was just tax mania, and our obsession in this budget is to protect the French people from any tax increases.
One thing's clear, France's parliament remains deeply divided since the president lost his majority last year. And this vote could now rattle the country's fragile minority government.
Well, Monday, November the 10th, marks the start of the 30th United Nations Climate Change Conference, otherwise known as the COP30. It's taking place this year in Belém, Brazil. Now, ahead of the start of that gathering, some 50 world leaders and stakeholders are meeting today on Thursday and Friday as well under the Brazilian president's leadership for a preview of sorts on this year's objectives. Coming 3 decades after the world's first ever climate conference and 10 years after the landmark Paris Climate Agreement, this year's gathering is less aimed at setting new goals than it is at ensuring that the international community respects existing ones. Here's the Brazilian president earlier.
To advance, we need to overcome two mismatches. The first mismatch is the lack of connection between the diplomatic saloons and the actual world. People cannot understand what are emissions or metric tons of carbon. Maybe they can't manage to assimilate the meaning of the increase of 1.5 degrees of the global temperature, but they suffer the droughts, floods, and hurricanes. The second mismatch is the decoupling between the geopolitical context and the climate urgencies. Extremist forces fabricate fake news and to obtain electoral gains and imprison future generations of a model that should be overcome.
That report and press reviews were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. Also, most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The hurricane disaster in Jamaica, stimulated by global warming, is an example of the importance of limiting greenhouse gas emissions. In the last 2 weeks, many nations announced new climate goals. UN Secretary General Guterres pointed out that the Paris Agreement goal is already a failure, but should make countries get more serious, not surrender. Then an analysis of the goals of COP30 and the effect Trump not sending a delegation and calling climate change a hoax will have on the conference. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Now, business leaders from around the world are meeting today in Brazil ahead of the United Nations Climate Summit, which is scheduled to kick off next week. Many countries have put climate change on the back burner amid war in Europe and the Middle East, and global trade turmoil caused by U.S. tariffs. But for other countries, the crisis can't be ignored.
A trail of devastation. Little more is left in this town after one of the Atlantic's worst ever recorded hurricanes swept through. It's just over a week since Hurricane Melissa hit Jamaica. The storm measured a Category 5, the highest level. Scientists say conditions that led to the storm's intensity were made six times more likely due to global warming. Extreme weather events like storms leading to flooding and increasing heat and drought are likely to get worse as global temperatures rise, experts say. Driven by the emissions from the burning of coal, gas and oil. It's something observers hope leaders, including Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and Germany's Chancellor Friedrich Merz will address as they meet in Belém, Brazil, just ahead of the official start of the COP30 climate summit here. Heads of state are coming under increasing pressure to show that they are taking action. In the past weeks, nations have delivered new goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 2035. But even if pledges are met, it would mean an increase of at least 2.3 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. Still, way above the 1.5 degrees leaders agreed to limit temperature rise to back in 2015.
Current commitments still point to climate breakdown. Scientists tell us that a temporary overshoot above 1.5 degrees is now inevitable, but this is no reason to surrender. It is a reason to step up and speed up.
In Belém, leaders are being called on to look at climate change not as an environmental challenge, but one that cuts across sectors.
It cuts across security, health, food, education, economics and finance. Having presidents and prime ministers to, you know, send the right signal that this is something that we consider being a priority at the level of the heads of state, I think is fundamental.
And this is just the beginning. 2 weeks of negotiations lie ahead for leaders to show that they can step up.
DW's chief climate reporter, Louise Osborne, is with me here in the studio. So, I mean, you know, ahead of COP30, Lula wrote, make this COP the COP of truth before people lose faith. There's a lot at stake, isn't there? Do you have the sense that it will be delivered upon?
I mean, it's hard to say. Today is all going to be about trying to reestablish some of the trust that has been lost over the past years. One of the things that Lula and the Brazilian presidency of COP30 want to do, for example, is to have leaders show that they are ready to take action on the big promises they have made over the past few years. At COPs in like the last 2 or 3 years, they have agreed, for example, to transition away from fossil fuels, to establish a loss and damage fund, and to mobilize $1.3 trillion in funding to help developing countries develop without using fossil fuels, but also to help them adapt to the impacts of climate change that are already being felt as a result of extreme weather. And so they want, you know, those big decisions have been made and yet the action has not been taken to kind of back them up. And that is what Brazil is pushing for now and will be asking leaders to commit to as they come to Belém today. This COP has been called the COP of implementation by the Brazilian presidency, and that's what they'll be pushing forwards with.
Some of the top politicians will not be in attendance. What's the point then if they're not there?
I mean, I think there's a lot of relief that the top politicians in the US, for example, President Trump, will not be there because it paves the way for talks to be perhaps more constructive, considering the pullback on climate policy within the US itself. There was also talk of some intimidation from the US delegations, for example, at the International Maritime Organization meetings to try to reduce carbon emissions in shipping. That led to a postponement of a deal that they wanted to make there. So the US not being there, some politicians will be seeing as positive. China is a different issue, saying that they are still going to have high-level politicians and leaders taking part in the conference today. But China, anyway, has kind of established itself as a climate leader in a lot of ways by putting forward, for example, its first goal to reduce carbon emissions, which is a big deal considering it is the biggest emitter globally, and also investing so heavily in renewable energy in the past. But let's not forget there are going to be more than 50 heads of states and heads of government at the meeting today and over the next couple of days. And we're talking about, you know, leaders like Keir Starmer from the UK, President Macron and Chancellor Merz, who will be there along with EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. And, you know, the EU is going to be trying to establish itself again as a leader on climate, considering they were so late to put forward goals to reduce emissions. And there has been a lot of dispute within the EU bloc itself over how they should move forward in emission reductions.
Chief Climate Reporter Louise Osborne, thank you so much.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, and most podcast sites. On to NHK World Radio Japan. More than 5 feet of rain fell in parts of Vietnam in 24 hours, the most ever recorded in the country. In December, Australia is going to start the ban on social media for those under 16. Following another Ukrainian bombing of a Russian oil port, Russia heavily bombed eastern Ukraine. NHK Japan.
Authorities in Vietnam say record rainfall that triggered major flooding in central regions has killed at least 40 people, and another six are still missing. Cleanup operations were underway on Tuesday in the ancient city of Hue. Soldiers used mops to disperse the muddy water. More than 1.7 meters of rain fell in just 24 hours in Hue last week. That's the most ever recorded in the country. Australia will become the first country to enforce a social media ban for children under the age of 16. The country's regulators say nine platforms will be included in the restriction, which will be implemented next month.
We want children to have a childhood, and we want parents to have peace of mind.
Wells says the ban will cover major platforms such as Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, and YouTube. The new law will oblige social media companies to take steps to block users under 16 from creating or keeping accounts. The law will take effect on December 10th. Many platform operators oppose the ban, saying the decision was made without adequate deliberation. But some companies, such as Facebook and Instagram operator Meta, say they'll comply with the new law. Some observers have cast doubts on whether the policy will be effective. They cite technical challenges, such as how to verify a user's age.
Russian forces have unleashed a large wave of attacks on Ukraine, causing deaths and massive power outages. The strikes took place on Saturday and Sunday. Officials in Ukraine's eastern region of Donetsk and elsewhere say at least 15 people were killed. Ukraine's Ministry of Energy says the attacks cut power across Donetsk, parts of the southern region of Zaporizhia, and other areas. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine said on Sunday that Ukrainian forces struck a Black Sea port in southern Russia the day before. It said they attacked the oil-loading infrastructure of Tuapse port, one of the largest terminals in Russia. Ukraine has been ramping up strikes on Russia's oil-related facilities to sever Moscow's source for bankrolling its military offensive.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735. That's a new time and frequency. Or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times they announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may be easily found at most podcast sites as well. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show, like a longtime supporter in Oslo, Norway did this week, PayPal information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for this weekly production and distribution of this show, which is supplied freely to more than 100 radio stations across the globe. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Last weekend, the U.S. military bombed another boat in the Caribbean, alleged to be carrying drugs to the U.S., bringing the death toll to at least 64. The United Nations has demanded that the U.S. stop these attacks. According to Oxfam, the 10 richest Americans have increased their wealth by $700 billion since January. Israel continues bombing in Gaza and has only allowed 24% of aid trucks agreed to enter Gaza. Then a report on the proposals for rebuilding the Gaza Strip. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Over the weekend, the U.S. bombed yet another boat in the Caribbean, killing at least three people. Defense Secretary of the United States, that should be the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, claimed the boat was carrying drugs, but offered absolutely no proof. The United States has now bombed 15 boats, killing at least 64 people, over the past 2 months. U.N. Human Rights Chief Volker Turk has denounced the U.S. attacks. Turk's spokesperson, Ravina Samadini, said, "These attacks and their mounting human costs are unacceptable. The United States must halt such attacks and take all measures necessary to prevent the extrajudicial killing of people aboard these boats, whatever the criminal conduct alleged against them." In related news, the Washington Post reports that the Justice Department of the United States has told lawmakers that the War Powers Resolution does not apply to the boat strikes because U.S. service members have not been put into harm's way. Former State Department lawyer Brian Ficconi said in the Washington Post, "It's a wild claim of executive authority." This comes as the United States continues to amass more ships and aircraft near Venezuela. The 10 richest Americans have seen their wealth collectively grow by $700 billion, that's billion with a B, since President Trump's return to office in January. That's according to a report from Oxfam America, which details that in 2025, the share of total U.S. assets held by the richest 0.1% of Americans reached its highest level on record at 12.6%. Amy Paxman, The president and CEO of Oxfam America said, now the Trump administration and Republicans in Congress risked turbocharging that inequality that they wage a relentless strike and attack on working people and bargain with livelihoods during the government shutdown. Israel is continuing to carry out attacks in Gaza, shelling eastern areas of Deir al-Balah and the Musili refugee camp. Israel has killed at least 236 Palestinians since the so-called ceasefire went into effect on the 10th of October. Officials in Gaza have accused Israel of also violating the ceasefire by allowing Gaza just 24% of the aid trucks promised under the deal. Hamas has recently returned the bodies of three more Israeli soldiers who were killed during the October 7 attack. One of the main proposals for rebuilding the Gaza Strip that U.S. President Donald Trump's administration has presented to potential Gulf donor countries envisions the construction of roughly half a dozen residential regions on the eastern half of the Strip, which is currently under U.S. and Israeli control. Two Arab diplomats familiar with the matter told the Times of Israel that the new Gaza is the term frequently used by U.S. officials to describe a project that will take place on the eastern side of the Yellow Line, the newly created boundary which the Israeli army withdrew to on the 10th of October at the start of the Gaza ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas. The partial withdrawal left Israel in control of roughly 53%, more than half, of Gaza. And the demands have been that Israeli forces leave Gaza entirely. They still have more than half of Gaza under their control. Trump's plan for ending the war envisions a gradual withdrawing from the other side of the Gaza border and leaving the Strip altogether. However, that withdrawal is linked to the success of a still-to-be-established international stabilization force tasked with securing post-war Gaza, along with the disarmament of the Hamas group, which has shown no interest in giving up its weapons. This international stabilization force would be in effect by and under U.S. command, with Donald Trump leading the way. With those conditions for continued Israeli withdrawal so difficult to meet, the United States is not waiting to begin the reconstruction process, and top advisors to Trump, including his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, indicated that Washington wants to start with the Israeli side of the Yellow Line, the southern city of Rafah in particular. The U.S. proposal envisions as many as 1 million Palestinians, around half of Gaza's population, moving to the residential areas on the Israeli-held side of the Yellow Line. These areas will be built, they think, within 2 years, even if the Israeli forces do not withdraw. And the two diplomats briefed on the plan said that they have found the benchmark highly, highly unrealistic.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6060 or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.